Okay, thank you. Good morning and welcome everyone to this special meeting, or meeting of Stafford Borough Council's Special Planning Committee. My name is Brendan McEwen and I will be chairing this meeting. A couple of points for you to make a note. If you have a mobile phone, please switch it off or switch it to silent. And can I ask that members of the public refrain from commenting from the public gallery while members are speaking. On my right I have officers from the planning department, and on my left I have officers from law and administration. Officers from the planning department will present each application as it appears on the agenda. Members of the public who have indicated they wish to speak will be given 10 minutes, and I'll indicate when you have 1 minute left. Ward members, if they are here, are entitled to speak for up to 10 minutes, but I don't think we have a ward member who will be speaking. An audio recording is being taken of this meeting, which shall be published on the Borough Council website in due course. Members of this committee are reminded they do not enjoy any immunity as that enjoyed by our colleagues in Parliament. Members may only deal with the planning applications before them in accordance with National Planning Policy Framework and the adopted local plan for Stafford, together with any other relevant planning matters. So, apologies, I think, is the first item.
Thank you, Chairman. Apologies received from Councillor Marnie Fields.
Okay, thank you. And declarations of interest, or any members being lobbied by anyone on any application? No? Okay, so we'll go to the first planning application then, and Stephen, are you going to introduce this one? This is planning application, oh no, Shugborough first, sorry, Ed. So it's application 23/37238, Shugborough Park, and Ed Handley is going to introduce this.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. Two applications to be considered today related to the Shugborough Estate, one for planning permission and another for listed building consent. The first application is that for planning permission for a major scheme of improvement works to the Shugborough Estate, including the following major elements: new access onto the A513 and reinstatement of the Litchfield Drive approach, relocation of the main car park, new visitor welcome centre and toilet block, extension and conversion of two buildings to provide updated staff facilities, partial demolition and rebuilding of the Ward Garden and associated landscaping works. The plan view on the presentation, this is the application location plan. It shows the location of the Shugborough Estate to the east of Stafford off the A513. The red edge, if you notice, is correct on this plan, but in the agenda it only shows the location of the access works. The aerial view shows the location of the estate slightly better. You can see the railway line running through the middle of the image, obviously going underground through the estate. The A513 running through the bottom of the image, and the walled garden and the car park right in the middle. The new access through this part of the estate, closed car park in here. This is the World War II building. These are the outdoor education buildings. This is the walled garden. This is the existing car park. And this is the existing exit from the estate. The photo plans show the location of the following 10 photographs. The first one, photograph one, is existing outdoor education centre building to be demolished. The veteran and oak tree discussed in the officer's report is that to the right hand side of the picture. This is the site of the proposed visitor centre and toilet block. Image two is the site of the proposed car park. Looking west, the rail line is beyond the trees to the left hand side. Three is another outdoor education centre building. Four is the listed Litchfield Drive railway bridge looking south, and the line of the Litchfield Drive to be reinstated. 5 is the Litchfield Lodges from Litchfield Drive looking back towards the A513. 6 is the existing Litchfield Drive junction to be closed up. 7, the World War II building, the proposed extension would be on the right hand side. 8, the same building viewed from the west of the estate, so the extension would be on the other side of the building. The southwest corner of the walled garden, the modern vehicular gate would be removed and the wall reinstated with the revised line of the wall. And the final image showing the existing gap between the walled garden and Network Rail land, which is part of the West Coast Main Line. The plans, the first shows the application site boundary in red, where it relates to the proposed access onto the A513. This shows the majority of the different elements of the proposal, the access drive, the car park, exit route, walled garden, World War II building, and the existing car park to be removed. The existing car park's in the top left of that, the walled garden to the right hand side, new car park in the middle, and the access route to the bottom right. Plan three shows the landscaping works around Park Farm to the middle, the bottom of that page, and at the top, landscaping works around an existing car park near the mansion. And 4 is the floor plans for the visitor centre building and the toilet block. Plans 5 and 6 show the elevations of the visitor welcome building. Plan 7 is the elevations of the toilet block. Plan 8, elevations of the World War II building and the proposed lean-to extension on the side. Floor plans for that building. 10 and 11 are the elevations and floor plans of the plant shop building next to the walled garden. One late representation has been received, which can be summarised to the following points. A feasibility report to reducing the speed limit on the A513 has been carried out by County Council. The report did not recommend a reduced speed limit, but suggests safety measures by the Bunchbowl car park. Reductions in speed limits and weight limits on Brockton Road are currently being designed and consulted upon. Alterations to the entrance to the car parks at Punchbowl and Seven Springs are being considered, and the County Councillor is seeking a reduction in the speed limit to 40 mile an hour on the A513. The implementation of this, along with signage and safety measures, would cost around £25,000 to £30,000, and if approved, the financial contribution, according to this representation, should be secured towards these works. Alternatively, the application be refused. The representation doesn't materially change the officer's consideration or recommendation. The local highway authority have commented on the application and made a recommendation that the application be approved. They've made recommendations to conditions and planning obligations which would make the proposed development acceptable, and it's not considered that any further contribution would be required in order to make the development acceptable. Notwithstanding the conditions recommended in the agenda, having discussed the conditions in more detail with the applicant, the recommended conditions are to be updated. So in condition 6, reference to the A513 junction is to be removed. Condition 6 is page 48 and 49, I believe. Yeah. So on page 49.3 of condition 6, new A513 junction, that reference is to be removed from condition 6, and the requirement for an arboricultural method statement associated with these works should be dealt with via a new separate condition. That would be drafted to prohibit work to the A513 junction unless and until the method statement is approved by the local planning authority. So that would achieve the same, secure the same information, because it would have a different trigger point to the other method statements required by Commission 6. Yes. And the additional condition would duplicate items A to C and E of condition 6. The recommendation is that the application be approved, subject to the conditions and as verbally updated, and subject to the applicant agreement to a planning obligation. Thank you.
We have a supporter to speak on this, Mr. Simon Hawley. Okay, you have 10 minutes, and if you get to 9 minutes, I'll give you a shout. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I won't need that long. I do have a bit of a cough, so apologies if I'm a bit sputtery. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the case officer for the help committee report and guidance with his planning application. The application proposals before you this morning is a product of positive and ongoing consultation between the National Trust, council officers and consultees, both during and prior to the determination process. The proposed development is a major scheme of improvement works to the Shugborough Estate. The development will create a new visit centre and toilet block. The current welcome centre is undersized and inflexible. The new visitor centre is a high quality building that includes a small cafe and information points for visitors. The building is curved with a large glass window to frame views of the veteran oak tree in this location. Following its completion, the existing welcome centre will be demolished and grassed over. A new 530-space car park is proposed, which will replace the existing 326-space car park next to the walled garden. Two further overspill car parks will also be provided. Last year, approximately 269,000 people visited the estate. The current infrastructure was designed to support around 250,000 visitors per year. The car park is beginning to struggle with the increased visitor numbers, hence this element of the scheme. As part of the development, the old car park will be returned to parkland. The heritage statement submitted with the application advises that the removal of the existing car park, which is set in a highly significant area of the landscape of parkland, would be greatly beneficial in heritage terms. The existing Litchfield Drive access off Litchfield Road will be reinstated and brought back into use for cars. The existing access route will be retained for larger vehicles. This is a significant benefit of the scheme, as the existing access has visibility problems and has experienced accidents. Two existing and underused buildings will be converted to provide staff facilities. These buildings will be reconditioned. Improvements include the addition of canopies and solar panels, alongside the buildings being made wind and water tight. To facilitate these developments, the southmost curved corner of a walled garden will be dismantled and rebuilt 2.4 metres to the northeast, the larger radius to facilitate the proposed new vehicle exit route. The wall in this location is in poor condition, with a significant amount of vegetation growing, which is causing damage. The existing historic bricks will be reused where possible, and replacement bricks, capping stones and lime mortar mixes will be the same as those used in the recent pair works for the rest of the walled garden. It is the applicant's view that proposed development is development plan compliant, will deliver significant benefits to this important heritage asset. It is respectfully requested that the planning permission is granted. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, thank you. I think we all learned a lot from that site visit this morning. Very useful, and hopefully will enable us to discuss this properly. Ed, before we begin, you mentioned on page 48 condition 6.
Yeah.
Could you just go over that again for me, please?
So, condition 6 requires an operational method statement relating to 8 elements of work, so to ensure that trees in those locations are protected and retained. The trigger point for that is no development to take place other than pre-development ecological mitigation works, hedgerow and tree removal, until those are submitted and approved. The recommendation is to take the third point, the new A513 junction, out of that condition, and to put a new condition, another condition in, to require a method statement for those works but not pre-commencement, to allow the other works to go ahead, and then that would follow later on. So no works to the new A513 junction could be carried out unless and until an Arborough Cultural Methods statement is submitted. The second list of details to be required in the AMS, points A to F, all of those except for point D would be carried over, because D relates specifically to the veteran oak tree near the welcome centre, so that wouldn't be required in the new condition, an additional condition, sorry.
Okay, thank you. Who wants to open the batting? I think you just got in ahead there, Councillor Frank James.
Two questions. The additional car parking, will that be on grassland or will it be tarmac base?
Yes, through the chairman.
Will it be grass over or tarmac?
Will it be grassland or tarmac base?
The existing?
The additional car parking.
So there are two elements. So the overflow car park would be grass infill. The main car park would be hard surfaced. I'm just trying to find the part of the report that does detail.
Would it help if I ask Mr. Hawley if you could answer that question?
I can answer immediately.
Go on.
That's correct. Because of the level of the usage of a main car park, it needs to be hard surface, but the overflow car parks will be reinforced grass.
Okay, thank you.
The second question. As we walk round by the wall, which is going to be moved back, we went over the brook, the bridge over the brook. Is that going to be altered because it's going to be very wide for vehicles to go over?
The existing bridge is being retained for no vehicles, and a new bridge is being built next to it. So it will still be retained because it's part of the history of that stream.
Okay.
Councillor Brian Cross.
Chairman. Can we confirm that the access off Litchfield Road is entrance only? There will be no vehicles exiting at that reopened junction.
The proposed access is for vehicles entering. The only vehicles that would be exiting there are the ones that are too large to go under the railway bridge and have to turn around and go back out.
No. Then I assume that there will be appropriate visibility splays, and I think you mentioned on site that the road's going to be widened so that you'll have a filter lane, is that correct?
That's correct. So the road would be widened on the north side, so on the Shugborough side of the road, to create a filter lane for right turns. And the proposed junction is a fully engineered junction, the Highway Authority have satisfied.
Yeah, I know it's highways, I'm not objecting, but I just wanted confirmation, because if it was access, vehicles coming off it could cause a problem, but as you said, it's entrance only unless specific vehicles.
Yes.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Gath Jones?
Yeah, I think we had an excellent site visit this morning. I think from the numbers that I've seen, this is an extremely popular location, and what is proposed will significantly enhance the visitor experience. And I would recommend that we approve this application.
Councillor Scott Spencer.
I've made a proposal.
You're proposing that. I'll just take Councillor Spencer first.
Thank you, Chair. I obviously not particularly enjoy the loss of the amount of trees that are going to be on this development, but I see there's a comprehensive sort of plan for the integration of those into the site. There's just one point I wanted to highlight on that. It's on page 17, lighting. It says that there's a view of conservation officer, environmental officer, or biodiversity officer raised concern regarding lighting. However, then the biodiversity officer does, on page 41, highlight there is a concern over lighting. And then part of the sort of conditions state that maybe this should be taken into consideration within the plan to avoid lights full on boxes and commuting areas of birds and so forth and so on. So I wondered, could, if we were of a mind to approve this, could that be added into condition 5? The external lighting sort of plan or such.
So is there any lighting proposed around the car park area?
There is a lighting document submitted with the application, and the reference to there being no concerns raised is that in principle there's no concern raised by those officers in terms of there being some lighting. However, they do require details of the lighting to be proposed, so there is a condition recommended. Condition 21, so all external lighting shall be installed in accordance with details which shall first be submitted to and approved in writing, broadly in accordance with the document that they've provided. So if details were to come forward, the biodiversity officer, conservation officer, who are out of an interest in environmental health, would be consulted on those details.
Okay, thank you. Just before I come to you, Julie. Have you any suggestions then, Councillor Spencer, about what sort of lighting, you know, do we have?
Well, I imagine that biodiversity officer would be able to answer that more fully, but I'd imagine part of that plan, the positioning of the bird boxes and so forth and flight paths would be taken into consideration, not just lighting to the public areas, but also with biodiversity as well.
Yes.
That'd be great.
Yes.
Okay. Councillor Julie Reid?
Can I ask about the information, the additional information, was it from County Council Highways on the road speed?
It was a Labour representation, effectively, a late representation.
A Labour?
No. It's the County Councillor for the area.
Me? Mm. I did it. Was the speed of the roads too fast? There going to be splashes on the road.
So, and the decision by the County Council was?
The local highway authority, County Council, have raised no objection to the proposal.
Disappointing. Thank you.
So, the suggestion was that the speed limit be reduced from 60 to 40 along there by the
people who are dying.
That's great.
Yeah. My comment would be that it is a very difficult exit to turn right onto that road, so it's a very fast road.
I don't know whether we have much control over that, do we, at this point? We couldn't condition anything. We've had a proposal by Councillor Garth Jones to approve. Anyone choosing to second? Councillor Tony Nixon, second. So we have to take that. Sorry?
Can you just check that decision to approve is subject to that?
Subject to the condition.
Yes,
that's on page 49.
Conditions.
It's easy for you to say. Subject to that condition then, propose to approve. All those in favour of that?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
So all of you, thank you very much. The application is approved with that minor amendment to condition 6. We now have to do the listed building part of it. Yeah? Okay. Do you need to go over that there?
Okay. So the second application is one for the listed building consent. It relates to the previous application, and the specific works which require listed building consent comprise the demolition and realignment of the southwest curved wall to the walled garden, and the extension of the internal works of the World War II building. The location plan is identical to the application you've just considered. The walled garden and the World War II building can be seen more clearly on the aerial view. This is the World War II building, extension on the east, and this is the walled garden, and it's this southwest corner which is being discussed. The photo plan shows three photographs. They are photographs you've already seen. The World War II building, the extension on the right hand side, the walled garden, and the more recent circular entrance, which will be removed, and the existing gap between the network rail land and the walled garden. Plan 1 shows a plan view of the existing southwest corner and the proximity to the network rail land. Plan 2 shows the proposed realignment, and the blue dotted line is row of bollards to prevent vehicles colliding with the wall. And plan 3, one that you've already seen, the World War II building and proposed canopy. Plan 4 is the floor plan of that building. The recommendation is that the application be approved subject to conditions.
Anyone wish to speak on this part of it? Councillor Frank James?
I can't see any problem with this wall development, because when we walk down the side, the gap between the rail line and the wall would be far too narrow for any sort of vehicle to go through. And I think the only option is to replace it, but it's good to know it's going back in the same condition.
Okay. Yeah, anyone else wish to speak? Anyone wish to make a proposal?
Well, I propose that we accept the application.
Councillor Gareth Jones, anyone wish to second? Councillor Julie Reid, yeah, second. So it's been proposed, seconded to approve. All those in favour, please show.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, Mr Chairman.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Now move on to the second application on the agenda. Application number 23/37621. Stephen, you're opening?
Yeah, hello. The next item on the agenda is a large-scale major development. As you can see on the site location plan, So the site concerns Lower Hanyards Farm. I should say that the site is directly to the north of Lower Hanyards Farm. It's approximately 62 hectares of agricultural land, which is currently used for grazing and animal feed production. The site also features an existing wind turbine around the centre of the site. You might just be able to see the wind turbine. Yeah, the wind turbine here, which I believe was constructed during 2014 as part of an application which involved this wind turbine here. So it's an application for two wind turbines. There's also an overhead national grid power cable line which runs through this section of the site. You won't be able to see it on this plan, which provides a connection point to the existing wind turbines. As you can see, the site is bounded to the left, to the west, by a dense area of woodland. There's also woodlands scattered to the north. There's also Upper Hanyards Farm, which is located further to the east here. And I should mention that's Lower Hanyards Farm right here. And to the south of the site, you've got various agricultural plots. Here's some photos. The first image is taken from Hanyards Lane facing north. Around the centre of the site, as you can see, the wind turbine just to the right. That image is taken facing towards the western boundary of the site, towards the woodland as mentioned. Here's another image taken a bit further east, and that's facing towards the southeastern corner of the site. And this image here, this photograph, is looking directly eastwards up Hanyards Lane. And there's another image here, looking towards the corner of the site, towards the southeast, where you can see there's a substation, existing substation for the wind turbine. And here's further photos of that area. And this image here is taken from the Bridle Way, which is located adjacent to Upper Hanyards Farm. Here's another photo from the Bridle Way, looking towards the site. And again, you can see the wind turbine at the centre of the site. And that's looking down from Hanyards Lane, looking westward towards the site. And here's the entrance of the site. As you can see, Hanyards Farm is a private road. In terms of the access to the site, this is the main access to the site. It is a dead-end route. Hanyards Lane comes off Tixall Road Junction, which is also which is southwest of the site. There's vehicle access to the site provided along Hanyards Lane. The A518 is located towards the west and northwest of the site. Blackheath Lane provides a north to south route from the A518 to Tixall Road. And moving on to the proposal. The proposal is seeking temporary planning permission for up to 40 years for the development of a solar farm expected to generate up to 49.5 megawatts. The development mainly consists of ground-mounted solar panels, fixed to frames in rows of 12 by 2 panels, so you're talking tables of 24 panels each. There's also associated works, including perimeter fencing around. So there'd be perimeter fencing pretty much going around the boundary of the site. There's also a substation proposed here. As I couldn't show you earlier, here's the overhead national grid cable where the connection point will be created. There's extensions to existing access tracks. The photos were taken from different access points, so basically they're just going to extend a bit further. Also associated with the works are containers. I should have picked onto this actually. That gives you an image of the typical layout of the solar panels. And as you can see, they're tilted at a 20 to 25 degree angle facing southwards, with a height of about 0.8 metres, rising up to about 2.9 metres. Here's an image of the substation, which will provide a connection point. Here's an example of the perimeter fencing. Here are the containers. There's a total of about 7 containers which will be located along the access routes, and the main purposes of these containers is to store spare apparatus in case you get equipment failing, so it can be easily replaced with new apparatus. And here's an image just showing part of the proposal is intended to continue farm diversification, which will involve the continuation of the production of animal feed and also grazing. As you can see, this is an example of an existing solar farm in Somerset. The proposal also involves the removal of an existing hedgerow. However, various ecological enhancements are proposed, including enrichment of existing hedgerows, meadow planting. There's also mitigation involving additional tree and hedge planting, and farm diversification is shown here as an example. The authority's recommendation is to approve the application subject to conditions.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
I believe we have speakers in support and objection to this. Shall we go to the supporter first? Is it objection first? Sorry, okay. Tom Fellows, follows?
Yeah. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tom Follows. I'm representing the Inglewood Investment Company, and we're owners of the adjoining woodland next door. We're objecting this application on the grounds of, firstly, screening. We object to the proposed use of the woodland to provide screening mitigation for this development. In the report prepared for the committee, it stated the west side of the site is the boundary stent is bounded by dense woodland, creating a buffer between Stafford University and other developments further westward. This statement is incorrect. And I was proposing to show the members that photographs I take today from the university that shows straight into the site. There is no screening, no adequate screening. We've asked the question why there are no viewpoints. All the viewpoints you have just shown me are from the eastern side. There are no viewpoints from the eastern side, and we asked the planning authority why there weren't any viewpoints from there. The officer suggested that the reason there are no viewpoints is because the dense woodland adjacent to the site and the topography, the officers consider adequate screening is provided. The statement again is incorrect because, as we said, you can see straight from the university, straight to the site. There is no screening. The applicant makes a statement, it's accepted that where commercial woodland exists, trees may be felled when there is maturity. However, the timing of this is unknown and may run beyond the life of the solar farm. If felling does take place, it's likely to be phased, resulting in partial loss, followed by replanting. In response to this, we believe it shows the applicant has no idea which sections of the woodland will be felled, also a lack of understanding of woodland and commercial timber production. The reality that timber production is determined by four major factors, these being maturity of crop, market price of timber, disease, damage and windthrow. Most of our timber plantations are coming up to what we regard as optimum maturity, with the exceptions of a couple of stands of oaks in various newer plantations. We have two species of trees which we're looking to fell in the near future. These are suffering from ash dieback, and they're also suffering from red needle blight and Corsican pine. There's a large plantation that adjoins the university. This large plantation is highly susceptible to Phytophthora remorum. Any sign of Phytophthora remorum, and we are obliged to remove that. Legally, we have to remove that and remove the timber from site. From harvesting to replanting can be 5 years. We have a 5-year period from harvesting it to replanting it. It could be another 20 years before the trees reach any form of height that will provide screening. We would expect the whole of that southwest side of the wood, especially the lower parts of Blackheath Lane and the university building, to become more exposed to this development, not less exposed, more exposed, as we carry out thinnings and fellings. The planning officer is correct to say the applicant does not control the surrounding woodland, and officers cannot fully ensure the screening provided by the surrounding will remain throughout the lifetime of the development, which is expected up to 40 years. But it would be incorrect for the planning officer to say the surrounding woodland forests have not been allocated for future development, and it would be unreasonable to consider that woodlands do not offer screening. So Secondly, drainage and flooding. We've raised issues and concerns of the matter with the LPA and the local lead flood authority. Within Woodham, there's a water course that flows east to west into exiting the wood at Blacking Lane below Statue University and opposite Western Road Academy. As I would expect, most of the committee members are fully aware of the flooding issues on Blacking Lane, Western Road Academy car park and Western Road. These flooding events are a result of the saturated ground within the woodland not having further capacity to hold back flows of water coming from the African site and discharging into the watercourse running through the woodland. Any further increase of surface water being fed into this watercourse will inevitably lead to increased flooding of the affected roads and the academy's car park. We've raised with the LPA and the LFFA the issue that although they've been pulled to field walks by the African drainage consultants, the last thing on the 23rd of April, they've failed to identify substantial land drains that feed into the watercourse that run through Blackheath Cover. As a result, these drains are not marked on the drainage plans and therefore not protected from construction or accessible for maintenance once the site is developed. Though the LFA are aware of significant and frequent flood risks of Western site, we don't believe the proposed drainage scheme put forward by the flood risk assessment prepared by EWE Associates has been properly or diligently investigated. And we firmly believe the development will lead to increased flooding, not only of our woodland, but of Blackheath Lane and Western Road. Regarding the proposed use of the adjoining watercourse, case law determines that for every easement there is a dominant land, i.e. the land asserting use of the drain, and which is the applicant, and there is Serbian land, which is the land that is burdened by the use. This development will constitute radical change in the land's identity, as a result of this development, which is grounds for Serbian ourselves to object if the change results in an increased burden on our land, and we say it will increase the burden on our land, and so on. With regard to the steep gradients of secondary swales and southwest of the proposed development, we do not believe these will work as swales, which by definition are supposed to collect water and let this collected water soak slowly away gradually. We actually think the secondary swales will act more as ditches, which will rapidly transport water to primary swales. We also believe the suggested storage capacity of swales is significantly less than estimated due to the topography of the ground, i.e. water will not be stored on sloping sites. Given the land at the bottom of the site rises along the length of the primary swale that runs from west to east by at least 3 to 4 metres and supposedly feeds into the control structure and headwall at the eastern end of the run, we fail to see how any excess water will not overwhelm the swale and flood onto the lowland in the woodland, as it would be impossible to drain into the discharge control. EW Associates conclude in their flood risk assessment, it's considered that the risk of flooding from this from on-site runoff is significantly reduced with filter drains and capture drains, with controlled discharge to water courses. This statement actually confirms it cannot be guaranteed that there will be no flooding from the site runoff, as the phrase significantly reduced is not the same as no flood risk. No progress. Paragraph 157 of the National Planning Policy Framework succinctly states that the planning system should support the transition to a low carbon future in changing climate, taking full account of flood risk, which we don't believe it has. Finally, the other point is on the loss of agricultural production land. Government guidance calls for a strong presumption against solar farms on the best, most versatile land. 35% of this land is BMB, grade 3A, and the justification of the loss is made in the agricultural use support segment. But we say in the light of the SCC flood team's condition 2, compliance, which states vegetation shall be left to grow longer underneath panels extending to approximately 0.45 metres into each aisle. Grass along the leading edge of the panels should be left long, even when this top cut during summer, it will not be cut any shorter than 300 mil. In order to comply with the condition, this is in order for the applicant to comply with this condition, the proposed planning consent, we believe the land will not be grazed, as it would be impossible to prevent sheep grazing to below 300 mil. You can't train sheep to say, sorry, you can't go and graze any deeper than that. Also, the secondary swales, they're 1 metre by 1 metre wide. These run down the site. They are proposing that they're going to take silage cuts. You will not be driving over a 1 metre by 1 metre swale with a tractor or so. Physically it will be possible, but you will be damaged swales. There will be a loss of agricultural output from this development that does not justify the loss of the most versatile land, which the government advises against. So in conclusion, we object to the planning application on the grounds that currently there is not adequate greening for Stafford University. Without some form of agreement between ourselves and the applicant, which we need condition, we will not be providing screening for the development. As a surveying landowner, we're entitled to object and refuse any additional discharge of water through our landholding, and as accepted by you associates, there is no guarantee that the risk of flooding from on-site runoff will not cause further flooding. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and well timed. We now have a supporter, Paul Bailey. Okay, Mr. Bailey, 10 minutes.
Thank you, Chair.
Members of the meeting.
Firstly, Stephen has prepared obviously a very comprehensive report, so I won't really go into a lot of detail really about the scheme, but I just wanted to sort of pick up on a few points for members and just to clarify and emphasise one or two others. This scheme has sort of been in the planning and feasibility stage now for 3 years. There's been a lot of discussions with the local authority, with other agencies, and hard work by a large team of consultants to sort of put a detailed proposal together that satisfies planning matters and deals with a lot of technical issues. The applicant has had a sort of strong and long relationship with the farmer who currently owns the Hanyards farm, and over the last 10 years there's been a significant amount of green energy already generated from the two wind turbines which actually sit on the site, providing, you know, secure and cheap energy, and obviously he's keen to obviously build on the success of this particular scheme. There are a couple of things which I think set this scheme apart as a solar development from others. The first is probably the non-invasive approach by the applicant to this scheme. He sort of adopted an approach whereby the site has, and the construction of the site has been developed in such a way that it will cause less disruption to the land and make it easier to decommission following a cessation of electricity generation on site. So Stephen did touch on how these panels are going to be fixed, but the panels won't require any concrete foundations, so they will actually be fixed using sort of driven stakes into the ground. The only concrete foundations on site will be those for the substation, which will be also have a secure fence around it. The fencing around the site will be agricultural fencing, so constructed of timber, and timber posts for the CCTV as well. There will be no lighting, and proposals have been put in place to plant a perimeter hedge around the site which will be allowed to grow to a height in excess of 3 metres, other tree planting obviously around the site to obviously help soften the actual site from view. In terms of visual impact, the site sits in a bowl, and obviously we've spoken about there is woodland to the north and to the west, but particularly a combination of the terrain, copses of trees, hedges and so on to the south provide a lot of screening to the AOMB and the conservation areas of Tixall to the south. The LVIA, which was that's a landscape visual impact assessment which was prepared, identified there to be little harm, so no impact in terms of visual impact at medium to far distance, no impact on the conservation areas and no impact on Shrubborough. Yes, impact was identified at near distance, and that's predominantly from Hanyards Lane and from the footpath to the east. But we have worked with the local authority to put forward some planting proposals for tree planting along Hamyards Lane along the footpath, plus hedges, to try and mitigate against that very near visual impact. One other point, really a key point to make, is about the continued agricultural use. The applicants from a farming background was keen to ensure that there would be continued agricultural use on this particular site. The proposal is to shift to organic farming, and because of that there will be no comparable loss in agricultural production from this site, so there will be still animal feed in the form of haylage that will be collected from the site. There is sufficient room between the panels, which there's over 3 metres between the panels to enable that grass to be collected. And obviously there are other benefits as well from that organic farming approach. A couple of things really to pick up on in terms of drainage and trees. In terms of drainage, we've had a considerable discussions really with the lead flood authority, which have been ongoing, to sort of develop an acceptable scheme for dealing with surface water drainage. One of the key points to make is that there will be no increase in surface water because of this scheme. The same amount of rain which is falling on the site now will be the same after. What is and has been agreed with the local flood authority is that we will be providing betterment as part of the scheme. So we are looking to actually reduce the discharge rate from the site, which will actually slow down water movements further downstream. Now, that will be a combination of on-site storage and infiltration across the site. And at the moment, the scheme that's been agreed with the local flood authority is a drainage strategy. It's not a detailed scheme for drainage. That will be dealt with by condition to produce a very detailed drainage scheme at a later date with the lead flood authority. But as I say, at the moment the scheme is for betterment. It will actually improve surface water drainage rates to the west of the site by a ratio of 2-1, and to the east of the site a ratio of 4-1, and that is what has been agreed with the local flood authority. In terms of trees and screening, obviously, the previous speaker spoke about the trees to the northwest of the site. Yes, we take the point that the landscape changes and trees may be or may not be felled in the future. And that's the same for any development for planners to consider, whether that's a new building or anything else. I mean, my experience is that there's more change in the built environment than there is in the natural environment over time. I think one of the most important things to stress with this particular scheme is that the land to the north and to the west is predominantly screened by terrain rather than the woodland. I admit if the trees were completely removed there would be some visibility to the west around the university, which is on a private land, but where the landscape is the most sensitive to the south, a combination of the terrain, copses of trees, hedgerows and woodland provides us adequate screening, natural screening, to the sensitive areas of the AONB, the conservation area of Tixall and Ingestry, and also Shrubber Park. I think that's all I've got to say, unless members have got some questions that they would like answering.
Well, if we do need that, we'll come back to you.
All right, thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you. Now, unfortunately, Ward Member Frances Beattie can't be with us today, but she has sent in something she'd like to have read out. Who wants to do that? Lee.
I have been asked to speak on behalf of the Tixall and Ingestry communities and for the Parish Council to express their concerns. I apologise that, at very short notice, I am unable to appear personally. For me, the problem for Stafford Borough Council, as with many other councils as I see it, is that we have no borough-wide policy or policies specific to large solar farms, their location and their impact, and won't have until the new local plan is produced and adopted at some future date. These are semi-industrial utility grade power complexes with fields of 3 metre high dark solar panels, shipping containers containing electrical equipment and security fencing, highly visible in the countryside. They are not particularly efficient. As a rule, it takes about 200 acres to generate the same electricity by solar panels as one North Sea wind turbine. This represents an inefficient use of precious land, whatever its quality. I am anticipating two more applications in my ward alone, covering a sizeable acreage of semi-industrial development across our countryside. There are others elsewhere in the borough. It's all very well to consider each one on merit, but we need a considered and approved local policy and mapping to guide our decision making. The fact is that nearly all productive farmland in this county is grade 3A or 3B. We have very little grade 1 or 2, a designation not of quality but versatility of cropping. Our grade 3 land crops very fine grassland and cereals, part of which for animal feed, famously for beer, a small amount indeed of miscanthus for biomass energy. The applicant is a highly efficient, respected and first-rate farmer on a largely grade 3 farm. His need for new openings has been driven surely by HS2 carving up his farm. 50% of the site is arable grassland managed for silage and cattle grazing. If it were appropriate to approve this application, surely not on grounds of land grade. Indeed, Design Midlands highlights that this proposed development is on prime productive agricultural land. That argument would justify solar farms across all of the farmland in this borough. The solar energy firms, I understand, have been approaching numbers of local farmers to set up deals. Solar energy, like wind power, is expected to double in size over the next decade as more of the UK economy switches to low carbon electricity. It is a profitable form of diversification for farmers. The applicants point out that solar farms are unlikely to make up more than a modest proportion of land use. That stands to reason, but the impending applications in this ward testify to a surge in developer approaches. Many newer solar farms are 5 to 10 times larger than the government supported solar farms that were constructed some 6 to 8 years ago, and a few are bigger still. The demand will assuredly continue, challenging our ability to manage location numbers. As the officer's report says, this solar farm will form a dominant view in the landscape, clearly seen from users on the southern boundary from Lower Hanyards Farm and along lengths of Hanyards Lane. There will be a clear distant view of the solar arrays. The substation will be mostly surrounded by palisade fencing, which is not sympathetic to the rural character of Hanyards Lane, but required to comply with safety regulations. And there is a specific challenge that is not apparently responded to satisfactorily, that of the neighbour whose tree plantations are claimed by the applicants will be screening the enterprise. He categorically disputes the applicant's statements, saying that most of his timber plantations are coming to optimum maturity, felling determined by maturity of crop, market prices and disease. 3 species will be felled soon due to ash dieback, red needle blight in the Corsican plantations, and a large plantation susceptible to phytophthora. It will be 20 plus years before the replanting provides any visual screening for the lower parts of the site. Consequently, the whole of the southwest side of the wood, especially the lower part of Blackheath Lane, the university buildings on Blackheath Lane and Western Road Academy, will be even more visible. The 2 metal containers, 6 metres in length and 2.9 metres high, in which inverters are situated and will be sited in a very prominent position on the southwestern slope of the development, which overlooks Blackheath Covert, and is only 100 metres away from the side of the wood and less than 500 metres from university buildings, there will be no screening from between these inverters and the university building to absorb any of the significant noise created by the inverters. So the considerations are that the countryside will be semi-industrialised by this large solar farm, that the nation requires homegrown food, the solar farm will be unattractive and take away the natural look of the land, continuous rows of grass panels completely alter landscape character, an eyesore in a particularly attractive and historic location. The southwest end will be exposed as the adjacent woodland is felled. The boundaries will be made conspicuous by the erection of protuberant security fencing.
Okay, thank you, Lee. So that was read out on behalf of Councillor Frances Beattie, and we wish her husband well. So you've heard two sides of the argument. Who wants to speak first? Councillor Gareth Jones.
Obviously, the figure of installation of 49.5 is critical, has been under whatever. There's a question raised by a commenter in the report that says, how could you guarantee that you don't exceed that? And I'm just wondering what sort of controls exist to ensure that if it's approved at 49.5 that it will stay at 49.5, and then what is the next level up if that is exceeded, etc. So I'd be interested to know what that position is.
I think this came up on the coach, didn't it, Stephen? Do you want to?
Yeah, I can answer this. Well, basically, any solar farm generating 50 megawatts or greater requires consent from the Secretary of State. So basically, the local planning authority couldn't approve a solar farm 50 plus megawatts. I'm also being informed that the connection capacity is also limited to 49.5 megawatts. So it's not designed to exceed that amount, the generation of 49.5, I should say.
Councillor Frank James?
Yeah, I asked the question when we were on the site visit, and I listened to our friend who spoke earlier on. The increase in the rainfall, we can't control that. The global changes are bringing us tremendous flooding problems all across Stafford area now, and the Western Road recently has been one of the highest again in the list of flooding, and it does concern me. I think there should be something in there where we either have some pools put in there to take this excess water quickly. Yes, it'll still be raining onto the land, but it will be increasing its speed to get to the roadway structures and everything around the areas. I believe that we should put something in there which controls this water flow. They've not convinced me that they've got it right yet.
Mm-hmm. Councillor Julie Reid.
Well, on the water, I'm not quite clear which piece of land is actually having the impact you're describing on Blackheath Lake, because it's certainly been underwater in a way that I've never seen before. But the woodland adjacent to Blackheath Lane is not part of this development, for instance. But what I wanted to ask about really was the farmland and its the circumstances and its history of farming, especially in relation to the impact of the HS2 plan that's obviously now ended. Because we've heard discussion about the grade of the farmland and its use for food from Councillor Beattie. So in kind of to judge how the use of this farmland has changed and is now going to be used in this way, I'd like to know more about the impact of HS2. How was it used in terms of food production, or how effective was it as a working farm in those years before the impact of HS2?
Well, in terms of the agricultural production, my understanding is that it is currently in agriculture use and was in agriculture use, but not for the production of crops for human consumption. In terms of the cancellation of the HS2, we do have a slide here which shows the intended route of HS2. Now, the HS2 route would have involved the demolition of Upper Hanyards Farm There would have been HS2 Woodland along here, and now that's cancelled. But in all, the cancellation of the HS2 development, in terms of highways impacts, actually supports the scheme due to the construction traffic, which was using Hanyards Lane, would now, you know, cease. Well, it's my understanding it has stopped, so the terminal construction traffic would be significantly less. The changes to the scheme in terms of the HS2, we did receive additional information from the developer, and in terms of the design strategy, the layout remained the same. However, there was additional screening provided towards the east of the site, and the main focus, the main reasons for this site, the selection of the site, was due to the topography, and also, which is very essential, is the connection to the overhead national grid cable.
Okay, thank you. Councillor
Scott Spencer? Yeah, no, well, sorry, I think I'd like to comment that. I suppose this is a story, isn't it, of the pressure on farmers and I think that there are some movements in Stafford towards developing our food security and keeping our rural character here rather than removing it in this way.
Scott?
I think we have potentially a conflict of interest with regards to sort of the screening and the temporary nature and so forth of this development. For instance, we've heard that maybe the woodland to the west may well be reduced significantly over the time period. And yet this development is temporary in nature for 40 years. So if we were to say, oh, let's do some additional screening to compensate for the woodland being removed, we're therefore removing potential farmland after 40 years which could be used, and also if then the development doesn't become temporary, unless we then say, well, we chop down all the trees or all the screen that we put in place in 40 years time. And so additionally, that's also with the drainage as well. If we put in conditions to say, let's have some attenuation ponds put in here to wherever they may be located, they also potentially become permanent and not temporary in nature as well, because they may well take on biodiversity, newts and so forth, which would then preclude them to be removed at a later date. So I think we have a bit of an issue with regards to the screening and the drainage and the 40-year lifespan of this development. So I'm not sure how we can sort of work between those.
Councillor Tony Nixon.
On page 89 of the conditions, there's a whole list of points here that have got to be complied with. Am I right in thinking that if the discharge rate exceeds a certain amount, then it's got to have a storage volume of 333 square metres? And if it exceeds another amount, which is 101 litres, Is that right, or is it 10 litres of discharge, of storage volume of 645 square metres? Does that mean if they exceed this runoff, they have then got to put attenuation ponds in?
Which page are
you on? Page 89, and it's a third of the way down.
Part of condition 13, Chair.
Okay. And how do you enforce that condition?
Well, that's the question I'm asking.
what the condition is asking for is for the details to demonstrate if the infiltration can be provided, then they would not have to provide the alternative methods of discharge. So it does require the BRE testing to see if the, because there's an outline drainage strategy So the maximum this is if the infiltration does not provide the following BOE testing, which basically maximum discharge rate of 16.4 litres for catchment one discharging, or maximum discharge of 10 litres per second for the catchment two, to the west of the site with a minimum storage of 643 cubic metres. I mean, that's what would have to be provided if the infiltration testing doesn't follow the BRE requirements.
If I could just come back on that, does that mean that if this solar panel is finished and the flood risk and the Western Road floods every time it rains, does that mean they have then got to supply storage for it?
This condition is required before any commencement of works. So drainage strategy, a robust drainage strategy would need to be agreed with the local lead flood authority before development.
It's a pre-commencement condition, yeah. So they would need to, as Stephen said, demonstrate that to discharge the condition before they could start work on site.
Councillor Spencer,
if I could just come back on, how do you know what the runoff's going to be until they've actually erected the solar panels? That's the point I'm making. Until they're in use, they're fitted. How do you know what the runoff's going to be? That was the point I was making. You won't know until they're up, will you?
Well, the rainfall's going to be the same as with or without them, isn't it? So you know how much is coming onto that total of that land. Mm-hmm. It's where the solar panels direct it to. So
exactly.
The amount it's not going to change the amount. It's just going to change where on the site
where
it's
goes.
Councillor Spencer.
Slightly follow on for what Councillor Nixon was saying now, regards that drainage and so forth. There will be drainage tests completed, which will then give you the infiltration amount for the ground. However, as stated, if that infiltration rate isn't sufficient, then they will have to, we're reading this, provide attenuation ponds, which, and I see on that plan, I cannot see any plans that show where this attenuation pond would be. So therefore, we're almost approving, if we were to approve this, we're approving plans which may actually substantially change, because they'll have to provide attenuation ponds following the infiltration tests. Where would they be? How would that change the scheme, any planting that's provided, hedgerow, set, and so on. So what I'd like to see is another plan showing where the attenuation ponds would be on the site if they were needed.
Flood attenuation strategies, and it's common across a lot of types of developments, can be done underground.
Correct, but that would then mean that how would that be reversible? Would that be substantial harm to the agricultural assets of the farm itself?
I mean, the reversibility would become more complicated with the.
Just to follow up from that, you would need stop. You'd have to put the stockpiles on top so that you've removed somewhere on site. There'd have to be a holding zone for that area if you're going to put some sort of drainage in the ground. They would then have to be reinstated, so you've lost another section of solar panels from this area potentially as well. Mm-hmm. Or those topsoil bunds could be formed as screening area potentially for the, if you haven't finished. There's lots of elements here which I don't think have been looked at thoroughly. It could be used to provide additional screening as well.
Councillor Julie Reid.
Yeah, I just wanted to understand the 40-year lifespan of this development.
We would condition the permission for 40 years from the point of connection, from the date of connection. So it wouldn't be operational for more than 40 years according to the consent.
Well, what's the significance of 40 years? I don't.
Is this the lifespan of the panels themselves?
Yeah, I think it's. I mean, from the solar farms I've seen across the country, they tend to have up to 40 years, some 35 years. And my understanding is it's the lifespan of the panels. They start to lose efficiency over time, and I think 40 years is basically where they're knackered.
Anyone on this side?
I think this gentleman's going to try and answer something on the water.
Just for clarification.
It was just for clarification through you, Chair. It was just when you was mentioning, is there a plan? There is a plan. And I don't know if Stephen would be able to share it with you, but the drainage strategy has two options, two plans, one infiltration, one based on storage. And which one is chosen, or a combination of the two, depends on the BRE extensive testing on site. But Stephen, I'm sure we'll be able to share that with you, the plan showing the attenuation.
I sense confusion and some doubt about whether we have enough information before us for everyone to be satisfied. Councillor Frank-James?
Yeah, I think a decision today will be in haste. I think we should see a better design of how they're going to control the water flow. We haven't got it in front of us, I think, because we've all witnessed them last 6 months. Staff has become a floodplain. We've just been on some land on the Shrewsbury side where this water will be arriving at, and it's going to be flooding everywhere. And we need a better plan on this.
Councillor Spencer?
I think I'd like to see the secondary plan as part of this presentation if the filtration isn't adequate, so that we can decide on the two variants of this scheme.
So I'm sensing we've got two options.
We don't have an objection from Lead Local Flood Authority. In fact, we've got a condition from them. So they must be satisfied that it's capable of being controlled. Otherwise, there would be an objection.
I'm amazed.
I sense that there's also an issue with the screening, isn't there? And I think if these whatever the scheme is going to be for the secondary plan, could also incorporate potential screening which is not going to be provided by this woodland we've now heard, then surely that would be beneficial to see that, to know how would that impact the development and the wider scheme for Staff University and so forth.
Okay, right. So I don't sense that we want to approve it today. So we have the option of refusal or defer.
Chair, in both cases there would need to be material planning considerations taken into account and reasons given.
Councillor Spencer?
I would opt to defer based on further information.
In respect of the screening and the flood risk.
The plans associated to that. Okay.
I'll second that.
So, to propose and second it to defer based on those grounds.
Can we be clear what screening we're talking about?
Well, following hearing that the woodland to the west
is
likely to be removed or substantially reduced. Therefore, the screening from that side again is reduced. There will need to be surely some sort of input into the development in regards to that.
Not in the ownership or control of the applicant.
Indeed.
So effectively, what you're looking for is the applicant to look at the topography of the site, because obviously it's in a lower level than part of that woodland at least. And see what the impact would be if that wasn't there.
Yes, certainly the western side, though, isn't it? But then it raises to the east.
Okay, so we've had the proposal and seconded to defer. Can we have a show of hands on that one? Who wants to defer it?
One, Mr. Chair.
Three. Two, three. Anyone want to vote the other way? No? Okay, so we carry on. Any abstentions on that one? Or are you just not happy? Okay, so we can't defer it then. We've done that one. So what do you want to do now?
be against the deferral?
Was there any against the deferral?
No.
So the rest are all abstentions?
I'm confused, like many of us are, I think. And what's been said in this report, amongst other things, is that the local flood authority have said it's fine. And so what we want to do now is get the applicant to go back to his planners or whatever and say, yeah, we know that, but the local flood authority is in favour of it. We want you to do a 10-inch pond, or you want to do this, that, or the other. And I can't see where that's going to go, but you go back to the lead flood authority and they'll say, there's nothing wrong with it, we like it as it is. That's why I'm confused. I mean, normally we go with what the experts say, don't we?
I don't know the case first, but I'll go to you, Councillor Nixon.
I don't think the flood authority have said it's all right in this condition, because they're waiting to see what happens with this infiltration, are they not? And they've got to do the tests first, as I read it. Is that correct? Is that what all this page 89 is about?
Yeah, condition 13, Jim.
Yeah.
My understanding is as Paul mentioned, there has been options in terms of the flood prevention scheme, and however, the local flood lead authority haven't had testing in order to determine which option can be is most viable. So I think, in all, they've said, well, it can be done, depending on whether or which option it is. But we need to find out the BRE testing before we can determine which option's more appropriate. That's my understanding.
Councillor Spencer?
So I think what we're, to answer Councillor Jones, I think what we're asking for reassessment, because that's already done, we're requesting what the plans will look like should the worst case scenario be that the infiltration isn't effective on
the site. Mr. Chairman, I mean, I don't, like anybody else, I don't want to be in a mess in 3 weeks, 6 weeks' time, whatever, when we discover that we were wrong and actually the place floods. But, we ought to put it aside and come back to it when it's been done again.
Okay, so you're proposing deferral.
I think
I am. Yes,
I'm not comfortable with either.
Okay. Well, Frank James, you proposed deferral originally, didn't
no.
you?
No, no. Spencer proposed
it.
Seconded it.
Can I just come back to page 92? It says, to prevent flooding by ensuring satisfactory storage of disposable surface water from the site, policy number 2 of the plan of Stafford Borough. We haven't seen anything which is going to, at this moment in time, in the plan, which is going to do that. Right. Stafford's got a major flooding problem at the moment.
Right, so we've had a proposal to defer, being seconded. Are we going to vote on that one now? Yes? All those in favour of deferral?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, yeah. Unanimous.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for your input. Let's close the meeting at just after 20 to 1.